Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's amazing episode. I'm really excited to bring to you today global perspective and a global connection with this amazing coach, Veronica Amaya. Veronica is joining us from Munich, Germany. And ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about the secrets to missing connections. What is missing in the relationships that we're trying to form, and all sorts of interesting tips and tricks around that. So Veronica, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here. I'm very excited for our conversation.
Oh, and we're excited to have you. So let's jump right into it and let's talk about the missing connection.
Yeah. So I think it is such an important piece because very often, you know, these days we have huge issue with depression, for example.
Yes.
And when we are disconnected in relationships, like, first of all, it is very... like we as humans, we are also animals, right? We are a species, and we are actually a social species. You know, there's some animals on Earth that are loners, that don't need others, but humans are not like this.
Totally.
We are meant to be in groups, right? And so these days we have such a big problem of people not feeling lonely. And I think it's very much connected with depression. But even in relationships, it could be that people are together for 10 or 20 years and they actually have no idea what's going on in each other. You know, what is the inner world of that person? And then often when they maybe decide to go to therapy, things come out and they're like, oh my gosh, I had like no idea that this is how you've been feeling, or I have no idea that this is how your childhood was really like. And then suddenly, like, a lot of anger just goes away because we understand the other person. Because if you can see someone clearly, then you're going to feel connected. But of course, you know, society, the way we talk to each other, very often people have not learned it. I think that this is also a big reason why people get separated or divorced, because if there is no connection, there's almost, you know, nothing holding you together. And so I think it would be really cool to understand the topic more, like, you know, why are people feeling disconnected and what can you do to feel more emotional connection to your partner or even to friends and your family?
That's so interesting that you say that people sometimes, when they go into counseling, they don't know a lot about their partner's family of origin and, you know, little t, big t, whatever traumas they had that can inform the way they look at the world and come to the world. And is there something that we should do prior to letting our relationship get disconnected? How do we go to those spaces, Veronica? How do we ask those questions? Whether it's, you know, somebody you've been dating for 4 months or 4 years or maybe 20 years?
Yeah, totally. I think this is such a great question. And so in my relationship, I'm together with my husband for 8 years, been married for 2. And we had the luck that because we had a nomad life for many years, we lived here and there. And that meant that every year, maybe 4 weeks in each year, we would spend either at my family or his family living in the house with our respective families.
Wow.
So we felt firsthand how the relationship, the childhood experience of our partner was like, you know? So for example, my pattern in the past was that as soon as there was a conflict, I got really aggressive. And my husband was always like, why are you so aggressive? What's happening? And then he went into my family and we were laughing the other day because he has seen me fight with, you know, a number of family members so often. And in his family, that never happens. You know, they just have a very different communication style. But he understood me why I was so aggressive. And now, you know, I was able to I trained myself out of it, which is beautiful. But he was not, he didn't think, oh my gosh, she's a selfish, horrible person. But he thought, ah, no, this is what she has learned, you know? And also, for example, I had it a lot in relationship to my father. He experienced the kind of pressure my father put on me himself. And he was like, oh, I understand what you went through. And it made him feel so, I was not the big, bad person anymore that was making his my life miserable. But instead, I was like a kind of like soft person who got hurt and he could have empathy for, you know, and the same was the other way around, you know? So, my husband,
but you had these conversations with your father then when you realized what was happening, right? And you do this work and now your husband, who isn't maybe as aggressive or volatile, sees you in your space. And that must have brought an aha to you to be observed. Like, he's like, oh, no wonder you get so crazy so easily. You're around all these people that go crazy. And so how did that make you show up differently?
Yes, 100%. Like for example, he would sometimes be like, oh my gosh, like, what are you guys doing? This is crazy. And then I'm like, oh yeah, actually, how is this? And also being in his family, because they have different shadows in our family. Like, for example, they are so polite to each other, which is so beautiful. And they problem solve on a very different level. But their shadow is that they put all the problems right under the carpet in a typical British fashion. So he learned to be more open and that it's okay to talk about stuff, you know? But also when I was there, like, for example, my husband has a pattern of, and I talked about this many times, but that when a woman is kind of like very emotional, it scares him. Why? Because his mother has like these issues emotionally, you know, and I could really understand him and be like, okay, because I was kind of like judging him. I was like, oh, you're not like a real man or something if you get triggered by me. But I experienced his mother in action and I was like, oh, okay, I get it. So this was our luck. But of course, you know, it's not the experience of every person that they can spend so much time with the other person's family. But I think you can just ask questions and with that even help, you know, your partner reflect, you know. So for example, you could say, it would really interest me, like, if there was, you had a problem, how did your parents react? Like, how did they try to help you? How did they do it, you know? Or if you came home with a bad grade, how did your parents react? Or was it important in your home that you cleaned your own room? How was the culture? So these inquisitive questions, and I think you could almost make it like a game, you know, maybe put it on flashcards or something. I think there's even a lot of games like this out there, but with the specific purpose to understanding this, the family culture, because we always think that every family is like ours, and that's not true at all. There's like so many different family styles, and like this culture of relating can be very, very different, even if in relatively similar cultures as England and Germany, you know?
Right. Which are, I would say, pretty different cultures.
Yes, exactly. But as you can imagine, for example, we have a lot of Indian friends, like Indian family culture in German is like even more different, right? Like, and so, for example, I think maybe, do you have an Indian background? Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. My parents are immigrants from India. So I'm first generation American.
Yes, exactly. So we met in India, actually, my husband and I. So we have like lots of like a very soft spot in our heart
for the country. Yay!
Yes. But when it comes to dating, of course, the more far away your culture is, the more interesting it is, because there can be huge differences. You know, what parents expect, how much you have to communicate. Can you bring your partner? You know, all this juicy stuff.
No, it's so true, because Indians typically, right, we live in a joint family structure in India, as you know, right? Like, elderly parents live with their children and grandchildren. And so you have to survive with these extended units living together. So there is a lot of sweeping things under the rug, a lot of passive aggressiveness or volatility, but not always a lot of skill in healthy relationships, right? You know, my mom always says, you just have to be more tolerant. It's about tolerance, right? And to some extent, it is about tolerance, but at a certain point that becomes unhealthy.
Yes, totally. When the personal boundaries are not accepted. And yes, that is very, very true. And as you can see, right, there's something positive and negative. And if we bring it together, like that's how it was in my relationship. It was beautiful. But bringing it back to the subject of connection, like, so as you start to see your partner in a very, very real way, and as I said, because often what stops you connecting is perceiving the other person as the enemy and the person that deliberately does things to hurt you. Like I was just coaching the other day a couple, and you can see it, you know, they have quite a long history of being together, and there's so much hurt and pain in the dynamic that all they perceive is basically to protect the part, you know, the part who is mean and pushes the other person away and is not reliable on all that. And what I'm trying to get them to see is behind that. Can you see, for example, the little boy who is very overwhelmed in his day-to-day life, and that's maybe why he's unreliable? Can you see the little girl who is absolutely scared to do something wrong? That's why maybe she can't handle criticism, you know? So, and then as you can see, it's like you go beyond the behavior towards the emotion, the experience, and it's much easier to feel empathy for that part and not just, you know, for, I call it like a protector part, which is kind of like this aggressive or any kind of defense mechanism displaying part that is meant to protect us. But with this part, we can't really connect. We have to connect with the scared one, the insecure one, you know, that maybe never felt loved.
No, I think it's so beautiful and it seems so commonsensical and logical what you're saying. And yet we don't come from, I don't think any culture looks at each other with that level of, let me understand your why. Why do you react this way? Why do you see the world this way? Why do you get aggressive when you're angry? Or why do you shut down and not talk to me for 7 days? But if you just go back a little ways, we learned those skills in our family of origin.
Exactly, 100%. And this is all really all where it starts. So yeah, whenever I coach people, this is always where we go to, because we are so impressionable, like, as, because we have to be, right? That's how we are intelligent beings, right? We learn through copying others and even unconsciously. And we just mimic everything that is around us. But this is also the great chance, because we as human beings, we can learn, you know, until we die. And so I love for people to really start these conscious relationships where you make yourselves aware, because my husband and I, we also had some quite toxic patterns in the beginning, but because we both really committed to the relationship and because we were really committing to owning our shadows, right? To looking, oh my gosh, what am I doing wrong? What is my pattern? Like me being aggressive. And then to being very honest about it. And now we were able to shift, you know, and this is the same with connection. Like even right now, for example, you feel like, oh my gosh, this is me. I feel totally disconnected. I don't even know. I feel like I don't even know my partner. Like you could change that, because, we are always able to learn something different and change these patterns, even if it seems like, you know, it's kind of like going on forever, it will never change. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious, if you don't mind my asking, how do you, as a formerly aggressive reactor, right? How do you tamp yourself down? Like, what is your methodology? Like, you might want to go from 0 to 100 immediately. Like, I have parents, one goes from 0 to 100 and the other one shuts down. So I'm really curious. I've hopefully learned to be somewhere in between, tamping down both of those things coming towards the center. But how do you, as being the person that was maybe more like my dad, how do you take a beat and not go into war mode right away?
Yes, I love that you say the word war mode. I always say that.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah. It's like you get your battle gear out and your hatchet and your shield, right? And you're going.
Yeah, 100%. So for me, the big key that happened was that I really understood that my husband is not the enemy and that I don't need to react this way because I didn't want it to. It didn't feel good. And always when I reacted this way, I got what I wanted, right? So the defense mechanism in that sense worked. But actually, I lost in a big way because I got my way. But my husband was really hurt. And, you know, the connection was like very, very far away. And we maybe needed a few days to, or even weeks to come back together again because of this outbreak. So my inner child just really, really, really realized that he is a different person. Because the reason why I reacted this way was because, as I said, in my family, you had to be loud. Otherwise, you were not heard. But with my husband, very different. You know, I could be like this, more quiet, and he would still hear me. And of course, in the beginning, very practically, I would like leave, you know, for example, and scream a bit into the pillow.
Right.
Or I would kind of like say to my husband, I'm angry right now, not at you, but I'm trying to not react like this. And I was kind of like voicing, for example, this. But yeah, just the biggest shift was really the insight. He's not my enemy. I don't need to fight him. It's okay. But that really comes when you and a partner commit that you, both of you, have to know that you're on the same team.
Yeah.
And that you're fighting for the same thing, you know?
And you're both committed to making it better, right? It can't be unilateral. It has to be bilateral, right? This can't be a conversation you, Veronica, are having in your own mind about, well, I'm going to be less volatile when he provokes me or I feel provoked, right? And then you change your way and he doesn't change his. This is a conversation you need to have during peacetime as opposed to wartime and put your strategy together at that point. Like, hey, we want this relationship to feel safe for both of us. And you tend to be more aggressive. You tend to shut down. How do we each feel safer in this, right? And I love that you say, you're not the enemy and I'm not the enemy. We're both in this and we both want this to get better and we both want this to be a safe space. So immediately we put down our weapons of either the knife or icing someone out.
Yes. Exactly, 100%. And he was acknowledging me when he saw, oh my God, she's trying. You know, she was like, afterwards, he was like, oh, Veronica, I really saw that you were trying to change this. And I appreciate it so much. You know, you're doing great. And I was like, okay, like, you know, and the same was for me. Like, instead of pressuring him, he needs to open up and open up. I had to show him that it's safe. And for example, because of what his mother used to do when he was opening up, she would use his information to backstab him, right? And I would always make him really sure if he then opens up to me and talks about something that I really honor that and that I don't use it to bring it up in 2 months and say, by the way, you said this. So, you know, so I show him again and again that it's safe. So as you were saying beautifully, it's a two-way street and both people have to want it. Yeah. But I feel like it's so powerful, you know, because what two people then can create, for example, in our case was not just like, I'm feeling better or something. It's like we are breaking a generational pattern.
Totally.
In both of our families, you know, and that is like huge because we don't have children yet, but when we have them, like they're going to grow up so differently. I mean, and even with my cousin's children, like we touch so many people, because we have grown so much. And I think this is also the gift because it is very hard, you know, to change this. And, you know, you have to admit that you're aggressive, even if you think that you're so loving and all that stuff. But the gift can be like amazing.
Well, yeah. And I assume, you know, there, you know, I would love, you know, to give our listeners maybe some starting questions of how do you evaluate the people that you're dating? Right? Or somebody that you're in a new relationship with, what are good questions to ask somebody to get at who is this person in front of you, right? This is the child of its parents, and those parents were the children of those grandparents, right? And so how do you react to conflict? How did your family react to conflict? What are your thoughts on money, saving versus spending, right? There's all of this, and we're all just basically byproducts of the generations before us.
Yes, totally. What I would say is that I think it's important, you know, not as you're dating, not to do it like a questionnaire at the police station.
Right. This is not a deposition. We're not at a law firm trying to find this out. But how do you have these, you know, open, organic conversations coming from a place of curiosity?
Yes.
I always say, come from a place of love, and you can say most things, you can ask most things, because when you switch that facet, I always say people are multifaceted like diamonds. And when you put that facet outwards, like I'm coming from a place of love, your tone changes. The way you say things changes. The way you receive things changes.
Yes, 100%. And like, I think most people actually like to talk about themselves, because there is something nice, you know, when someone asks in a way, as you were saying, I love that word, curiosity. So for example, I would say with giving information about yourself, you know, you could say something like, do you know what, these last months I have thought a lot about like my family and the culture in my family, and I felt, for example, like really interested in my ancestors and how their life was. And maybe you share a little bit about, you know, what you have found out, you know, for example, my grandmother was a farmer, and how she never, like, she left Germany only once, she flew only once, and I flew in my life maybe 200 times, you know, so how crazy is this, two generation removed, such a different life experience. If I'd start like this, then I say, do you have much contact with your grandmother? Like, what was her life like, you know? So you could ask that. And then as they're sharing maybe more hard facts, then you could say like, and you know, do you remember how was the relationship between your grandparents, you know? So kind of like starting with more facts and then maybe moving on to more kind of like softer, maybe more intimate details like relationship culture, communication styles. And I think it would be probably super interesting for the person you're dating, because maybe they never thought about it in this sort of like more objective way, you know? And then they're like, oh, actually so interesting, right? Like, for example, my husband's parents were divorced, and it was like so uncommon. They were both the only people in their class to be divorced. That's a very interesting like topic that my husband never thought about, but imagine what that means, you know, from a relationship perspective. So yeah, I would do it a bit like an inquiring interview, giving a bit information of you, and going from sort of like hard facts to maybe more dynamics within the family.
Yeah, I think so too. And these are conversations that you're probably not going to have on the first 3 or 4 dates. You want to see like, okay, do we get along? Do we have connections? Yeah. Is the conversation easy? But these are really important conversations, my dear listener, to have as you evaluate getting to be serious with somebody, becoming exclusive with them, and certainly post-exclusivity, because you want to make sure you understand this person that's sitting in front of you. And I think that having these conversations earlier than later can prevent so many cracks in a relationship, because then we don't bring the warrior or the person that ices things out when you actually have the bravery and the courage to get beneath the surface and talk about the culture that this person grew up with around communication, around family culture. What was their role in it? What did they experience, their grandparents, their parents like? What was money like? Right? What were your thoughts on, you know, what were you taught about relationships and sex growing up? And through that inquiry, you can basically learn so much about the person that you're with and have so much more empathy, to your point, about where this person comes from and how they might come to the world.
Yes, 100%. So I think it's actually about building more connection and also checking for compatibility, which is so important in the dating process, right? Are we in our values, in our lifestyle compatible? So I think it's like a double purpose that is so beautiful. And one thing I wanted to give like a little tip also for when you are dating,
please,
a little red flag is if your date is talking in too much of a rose-colored light about the parents. Like, I think it's awesome and very important to have respect for the older generation. But if someone has like sort of like only the most positive view of their parents, it shows that they have not matured very much because they're still in this, you know, as children, we need to idolize our parents to survive. And it's hard for us to see their negative traits, but we should grow out of this because it's very important to mature with ourselves to see, okay, my parents did this wrong and this wrong, you know, so that we can basically form a good own identity. So if they're, you know, if they're kind of like only like almost talking like a child about their parents, is a little bit of a red flag. And yeah.
No, I totally agree with that. And this conversation is so incredibly enlightening for me. You know, sometimes I ask my kids, I have a 20-year-old and a 16-year-old, like, what do you think we have a good marriage, right? And it's so interesting to hear their responses. But what this is making me think about is, what do you think the culture in our house has been around relationships? How do we have conflict? What is your dad like? What am I like? And to hear that perspective from the next generation. And for all of you that are out there listening, and maybe you're single, if you're a parent, talk to your kids. Like, how did you experience me? Like, what do you think? What was my communication style? Like, what am I like in conflict? And get that 360 viewpoint, because I think it would be incredibly enlightening. And it requires a little bit of bravery and courage. As I think about asking my kids this, I'm like, huh, okay, do I want to know what they think? Of course you want to know what they think, right? I remember asking my 16-year-old, and my husband and I have been married for 27 years, right? And we, you know, nobody's relationship is perfect, but I asked my son, Matt, I said, Max, do you think Dad and I have a good marriage? And I was interested to see what he would say. And he said, my friends and I talk about the fact that you guys have one of the best marriages. What was more shocking to me is my 16-year-old alpha male, right, that hangs out with a bunch of bros, that him and his bros are having conversations about their parents' marriages. I was like, okay, mic drop, mind exploded. More than that, it's like, okay, great that you think that we have a great relationship. And I asked him, why did our marriage rank up there? Like, we argue, we have friction, we're two very different people. He says, because you guys like spending time together.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Holy cow, from a 16-year-old's perspective. Yeah. But if you think about it, yeah, it's true. We like doing a lot of the same things. We're both hikers and bikers and we're active and we cook together. That doesn't mean our relationship is perfect. It doesn't mean we don't have conflict. They've heard us arguing. I remember the first time they heard us arguing, they're like, are you guys getting divorced? Like, we're just having a conversation, but they're so not used to it in the beginning when they were kids. They're like, oh my God, is this it? I'm like, no, this is not it. But it's very interesting to, I think, do that sort of 360. It just came to me right now. What do you think of that?
Oh my gosh. I mean, for me, I got shivers when you said that. This is literally always what I wanted when I was a teenager from my parents. Because I love them very much, but they always had a lot of conflict. And it was one of my deep wounds, you know, like growing up in this house of this conflict. And as you were saying, they were not friends. And I think it is such a brave thing to do. And I actually think because I think what needs to happen within family systems is also this intergenerational healing, you know, and that because I made a lot of peace with my parents, which was so important to me. And it mostly came from me, but they were also open, you know. But I think if it comes even more from the parents, I think it's so powerful, because of course you're going to mess up, right? You're going to leave wounds and emotional wounds behind your children. But if you do things like this, I think it's incredible because the children feel like their perspective matters, you know, and also that you are ready to take responsibility and to hear maybe sometimes something that is uncomfortable. But yeah, I also love that you're, but you can see like the teenagers are much more perceptive than we think, right? And in their own way, I mean, I think also the young generation is quite delusional about relationships because of all the divorces. So I think they pay attention because, yeah, I really wonder what, which trend's going to happen. Maybe like a no divorce trend or something like this, because, you know, I think they are now this generation that have grown up with a lot of broken families. So I don't know. I'm excited, but yeah, so cool that you think that. I love that.
Well, this conversation was, you know, I knew it would be great, but it's been more transformative even to me personally to think about relationship culture and how your partner is just the sum total of the generations that he or she comes from. And so if you can look at that person as not your enemy, but this person that is a child of the things that happened to them and their coping mechanisms are coming from that. No, but by no means are Veronica and I saying if you're in an abusive relationship that you should stick in that. No. That is not it. If your relationship is pretty harmonious with the standard level of right? Or if you are evaluating a new partner, these are metrics for that. In no way are we saying if somebody is abusing you or has been abusive to you, that that is your fault or you could have solved that. I just say by the grace of God, I'm grateful that you got out of a toxic relationship.
Yes, absolutely. And although we have inner children that have been hurt, we are also responsible for our actions. And those are the two things, right? Look to empathy to your partner, but also expect them to take self-responsibility for what they have done. And if they hurt you, then set boundaries. Very, very, very important. But if you have a generally good person, you know, like, you know, just someone base level good who treats you right and has faults, then I think you can use this empathic lens to not get so defensive when he or she does little things that trigger and hurt you. And then you both can feel more connection in the relationship and it can be very, very beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that this, what this requires, smart daters, is making sure that you're with a person, your partner is committed to personal growth and relationship growth. You know, if this isn't, yeah, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. I am what I am and I am who I am and this is who I am. I don't know. To me, that's a bit of a red flag. I want you to be with somebody who can have these conversations and can take feedback and give feedback from a place of love. And they want the relationship to be the best one they've ever had. And they're willing to do their part.
Absolutely agree.
Well, wonderful. Is there anything that I didn't ask you or any parting thoughts you want to leave our listeners with?
No, I just also want to say that I love this conversation and I hope to anyone who's out there that like you are beautiful and wonderful and there is a person out there that will see that, you know, and that because the thing about authenticity and opening ourselves up, it is scary, but when we do that, someone else can actually connect with us, you know? And to me, always when I coach people and there's this moment that they actually show me their heart, this is the moment when I feel so connected with them. And the same, you know, is true for relationships. So yeah, I send you so much love from Germany and wish you all the best.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Veronica, thank you so much for being such a lovely guest on our global podcast. I'm so excited to have you here from Germany. And if people want to learn more about you, where can they look?
So you can check out my website, veronicamaya.com. I also have a YouTube channel with the same name, Veronica Maya, and a TikTok. So I post like relationship advice there. And I also have a pretty successful blog. So I have a bunch of different topics, especially also around the masculine feminine polarity. So if you're interested, should check out my website.
Wonderful. Well, smart daters, until our next episode, I bid you farewell. So many of you lately have been saying, Bella, I've been listening to your podcast. I've binge watched or binge listened to it while driving across the country. This is your time to think about yourself and finding the right lid to your pot. And if you've been hemming and hawing and thinking about what it would be like to work with someone that can really hold your hand through this process, go to our website, smartdatingacademy.com, fill out a form, and set up a consultation. The steering wheel of your relationship life is in your hands. You are the driver. You are no longer the passenger. So with that, I bid you farewell. And until our next episode, have a wonderful weekend.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.